Hey, welcome back to Stories After Midnight. I appreciate you checking out this video if you're on YouTube or if you're on listening to podcast. Thank you for clicking on it randomly. Today's story is a continuation of our series. I'm the owner of a small diner in the middle of nowhere, and I like to give travelers who come in a discount provided they tell me a story about their lives. Over the last decade, I've heard some really terrifying things. This is part two. I hope you enjoy. Hey again, strangers. First of all, I'd like to thank all you lovely souls in my last post. I didn't expect to get such a response to it, and y'all's comments just have me floating on air. But I know y'all aren't here to listen to me get all sappy. You're here for more scary stories. And good news, I have a couple more lined up. My last post was a bit more sad than I wanted these stories to be, but it only felt appropriate that her story was the one I started with. Okay, anyways. I'm just so happy to be writing more of my stories out, knowing there are people reading them, and I'm a little over the place with this, and my friends are always telling me that I always get a bit too excited over things and gotta learn to slow my roll a bit. And I'm rambling. Okay, I'm going to go drink a glass of water and get a bit of my energy out. Just a moment. Right. So this one was actually one of the first paranormal-type stories I was ever told while doing this. I was 22, if I remember correctly, and one thing you have to know about me is back then, I was just this hyperactive little sprite of a girl, filled to bursting with barely contained excitement over literally everything. I still am, actually, just a little bit more tired as I enter my 30s. I've been saying to my family for years that I'd probably go get tested for ADHD if there was a clinic nearby, but that's not the point. But anyways, that day in question was going about as fast as a herd of turtles, and I actually remember thinking about just how bored out of my skull I was before the man walked in. I'd been bussing some tables when I looked up and noticed someone had come in. My heart skipped a beat or two when I realized it was an out-of-towner. He was an older man with graying hair and a fisherman's sweater, far too thick for the weather in Kansas. He sat down at a nearby table, and I went up to introduce myself and pour him some coffee. I took his order, scrambled eggs and bacon with ketchup and a side of fries, and sat down across from him, asking for his name. He told me his name was David, and he was on his way to visit his granddaughter Ellie in California. He was making his way there all the way from Michigan, where he worked as a lighthouse keeper. I raised my eyebrows at that before remarking that he must have some pretty interesting stories, and if he was willing to tell me one, I'd give him a discount on his meal before launching into dramatics over how bored I was at the moment. I made a few jokes about turning into the dad from The Shining. David chuckled and agreed to my proposal. I remember he asked me what my opinion was on spooky stories, that if I was making jokes about horror movies, he'd assume I liked them, and if so, I was in luck. Now, I told this old lighthouse keeper, quite frankly, that if he told me a horror story, I would give him even more of a discount, and he laughed again, and just told me that I reminded him of his granddaughter. I always love when people say things like that to me. He took a deep breath, along with a bite of his eggs, as I leaned forwards in anticipation. He then told me that in the town he's from, they have a rule. When a storm comes, the voices in the storm come with it. And no matter what, you do not open the door for them. If it's someone you know, you could establish a code word, but that's still risky. He said he'd always really wanted to have a job like a lighthouse keeper. The quiet and isolation of the job spoke to him. But when his girlfriend got pregnant at 17 and passed during childbirth, leaving him to raise his daughter alone, that sort of option went off the table. His daughter moved out when he was 35. Apparently, she had gotten a full-ride scholarship to Stanford and now works in biomedical engineering. And suddenly, he was living alone, and there was nothing stopping him from being a lighthouse keeper. His daughter was off chasing her dreams, and now he gets to chase his too. The old owner of the lighthouse was a man in his late 60s, who was getting ready to retire. He was very cheerful and friendly to David, until he got to what he called the voices in the storm. He said that they knew things, knew the names of your loved ones, knew the sound of their voices, but that it was not them. He explained that the voices will drag you into the storm and steal away your life. And David was very skeptical, of course, at first just believing that the old man was off his rocker, but then the first big storm rolled in. It was cold in the lighthouse, always so cold. But that night was different. With the wind and rain beat down against the metal walls of the building, and David spent the night in two sweaters and wrapped up in a blanket on top of that, until he heard the voice of his daughter out in the storm, begging for help. Whatever it actually was followed a pattern. It would cry out for David to help it, and then pound repeatedly on the door of the lighthouse, over and over again. It got to the point where David was running down the stairs, heart racing and mind filled with panic, when the words of the old lighthouse keeper cut through his screaming thoughts, and he stumbled to a stop. He began to think about what was going on more clearly. His daughter hasn't even visited him in the lighthouse yet. How would she know where it was? And even more, she was studying in California. She had worked her ass off to get into Stanford, and she was just texting him today about a big test she had later in the week. There's no way she'd leave school right now. And so David called his daughter, who thankfully picked up the phone, exhausted and a little stressed, but very much safe and alive, and in California. So what the hell was currently banging on his door, stealing his daughter's voice? Of course he didn't open it. He just went right back upstairs and went to bed, covering his ears with his blue throw blanket that he snatched off his couch on his way. And so, that was life for a while. Hell, I guess you could get used to that. Hell, I guess you can get used to just about everything eventually. David had gone out and purchased some noise-canceling headphones, as apparently the ones made for people with noise sensitivity issues really do a good job of blocking out noise. And so that was just life for a bit. The storm's calm. He puts on headphones and curls up with a book in his room, far away from the door. David got pretty good at ignoring the voices after a while, and everything seemed relatively manageable. He had rushed out to find a man laying on the sand amongst the wreckage of his boat. He quickly brought him out of the stormy weather into the lighthouse and started trying to figure out where he had come from. At the time, this huge storm had been brewing, and the waves apparently were strong enough to propel this poor guy's boat all the way to a different town. David had chastised him a bit for going out in the water with such a bad storm on the horizon. But hey, we all do stupid things. At least, he won't make this mistake again. He called up the Coast Guard and explained the situation, and asked if they could potentially send over a boat to help him get back. They told him they definitely could later, but it wasn't safe to send out a boat to collect him until the storm had passed. And so David decided to let the man stay with him, in the lighthouse, for the night, and ride out the storm together. The man's name was Charlie, if I remember correctly. Wait, was it Charlie? Hey, I'll just call him that for now. Well, anyways, Charlie was a novice fisherman from a few towns over, who recently got engaged to his fiancée, Kyria. That part is important later. On another note, while he had luckily escaped serious danger, he hadn't exactly gotten out of the wreck unscathed. He had hit some rocks as he capsized and had a few nasty cuts that David was tending to. He got so wrapped up in everything, bandaging up his wounds, checking to make sure that he wasn't concussed or anything, making him tea, that he didn't really remember about the storm until it was in full force around them. Ignoring the voices had become so routine for him that he barely even remembered that they were there. That was until Charlie suddenly stiffened, sitting straight up, with apparent horror in his eyes and face as white as a ghost. He whispered to David that he could hear something outside, something that sounded exactly like Kyria. It was only then David realized his mistake, and he tried to frantically explain about the voices in the storm to Charlie, but it was too late. Charlie took off running, way faster than he probably should have been able to, considering how banged up his legs were, but adrenaline does funny things to you, I guess. He tore down the steps of the lighthouse, screaming out for Kyria, as David raced after him, begging him to stop and listen. The voices were getting louder in response to his cries. David could hear them too. A young woman yelling for help in apparent agony and banging on the door of the lighthouse. He could hear her muffled sobs and pleas for help only grow louder and louder, and he raced down the spiral steps after the stranger, catching him and holding him firmly by the waist, pulling him away from the door as he was mere moments away from opening it. Charlie thrashed and sobbed in his arms, kicking and clawing at every part of David he could reach as he attempted to choke back the pain and scream at Charlie to just listen to him. I can still remember the exact words David used to describe it to me. Charlie, just stop and listen to me. That's not Kyria, okay? Whatever is outside the door, it's not your fiancé. It pretends to be my daughter, too. It comes in the storm and begs for help, but it is not them. David had gone on to try and debunk what was going on. How would Kyria know you're here? The Coast Guard told her you were safe, but didn't mention anything about where you are. Why would she even be out in the first place? That kind of thing. Yet he didn't listen. He was too distraught. He wasn't thinking clearly. All his rational thoughts were abandoned the moment he heard his love's voice out there in the storm. Whenever I think about this story, my mind always starts to drift to my husband and daughter, and I can't shake the gnawing conviction that if I was in Charlie's position, and I heard my husband's voice out there, or God forbid my baby girl's, I would do the exact same thing he did, because even though the chance of it actually being them is next to nothing, I would still put my life on the line without a second thought if there was even a sliver of hope I'd be saving them. For me, this is just a hypothetical, a disturbing thought experiment that makes you question how far you'd be willing to go, how much you'd be willing to risk to save the ones you love. But for Charlie, it was real, and Charlie actually did it. He bit David, sunk his teeth into the exposed flesh of his arm as hard as he possibly could, and bit down, and David finally dropped him, instinct overwhelming his rational mind as he moved to cradle his injured arm. The bite was hard enough to leave a scar, so detailed you can still see the outline of all of Charlie's teeth, years after the injury healed. Charlie bolted, getting to the door faster than a knife fight in a phone booth, and swung it open, launching himself into the storm before David could stop him. The last thing he said he remembers seeing was the horror on Charlie's face as he scrambled over to either pull him back in or shut the door behind as something grabbed at him and pulled him into the storm. Faced with the knowledge that he just watched a man die, David sank to the floor in shock as the voices on the other side of the door began to grow louder again, knowing he was still inside. He told me it was the worst night of his life, as the voices mimicked every single voice of the people he loved, his daughter, his family, his dead girlfriend, as they attempted to draw him out into the storm. When that didn't work, they turned to violence, banging on the door so hard David was scared it'd break, and scratching at the walls of the lighthouse while David lay there too terrified to move. He could hear them truly now that they'd dropped the act. Hellish, scratchy voices like nails on a chalkboard. They giggled and snarled and whispered as they tried to get David out of the lighthouse, in a way similar to trying to shake a turtle out of its shell. For one moment, he got up and peered through the small window in the doorframe, and that's when he caught a glimpse of those things. He didn't quite know how to describe them to me. He said the best way he could was like they were made of the storm itself. Smoky gray bodies that swirled and flickered in time with the howling of the wind that shifted from solid objects to simple wisps of smoke and back again. The things had sharp claws as dark as thunderclouds and eyes that flickered like lightning. There was much more than one of them, he realized. They took the shapes of men, women, and children, all flickering and floating and begging for more victims. David stopped for a moment and took a deep breath, before taking another sip of his coffee and speaking again. That's when I realized that whatever the hell those things are now, those were the victims. He told me he never found Charlie's body. Nobody did. Even to this day, he's still missing. The only things left now that show what happened that night is the bite mark still in David's arm and the scratches still etched deep into the walls of the lighthouse. That's it for part two. I really hope you enjoy that one. I think this series is going to be quite entertaining, so far at least. I will be uploading part three probably in the next couple days or so. I hope you enjoyed it. Consider liking the video, commenting, you know, letting YouTube know that this is probably something people might want to listen to if they like listening to stories or my voice, whatever, you know. I appreciate you just stopping by, and if you made it this far, I mean, ultimately, that's the real thanks. You can also join Patreon if you want to support the channel, or YouTube membership, either or, it doesn't matter, I just appreciate you hanging out. So, to end my ramblings, we'll see you in the next one.